Guadamos à la séance inaugurale du séminaire du CIS, du Centre Internet et Société du CNRS cette année. Donc Andrés va parler pendant une bonne demi-heure. Donc le titre de sa présentation, c'est Intelligence artificielle and copyright, the way forward. Vous pouvez poser vos questions soit en français, soit en anglais, soit en prenant la parole, en levant la main dans les petites options de Zoom, soit en tapant votre question dans la boîte chat, comme vous préférez. Et à la fin de la séance, puisque au CIS, quand les séminaires sont en présentiel, on a l'habitude d'inviter les participants à un petit goûter. Donc là, on essaye de reproduire virtuellement un espace de discussion informel et on vous enverra un lien pour nous retrouver donc à peu près de 15h30 à 16h sur YoTribe. Donc, qui est un espace qui permet des lieux de discussion informels. Voilà, donc Andrés Guadamos est senior lecturer en droit de la propriété intellectuelle à l'université de Sussex. Et ben Andrés, je vais te laisser la parole. Merci.
Ok, let's see. I'm going to do this in English. I'm sorry, I cannot present in French, but now I can understand much better. All right, let's see if this is going to work. I think I've tried this before. All right, no. Oh. All right. Here, portion of the screen, share. And I'm hoping this is going to work. Yes. Now you should be able to see my slides, right? All in the screen. All right, excellent. Let's get started and everyone can hear me fine. Sorry, I'm a bit rusty. It's been a weird summer. Okay, thanks very much for the invitation. And I'd like always to start my presentations with an apology. I've been doing this since 2006. And today, what I'm going to have to apologize is about the unimaginative title. So apologies for that. I used to present this as this title, Do Androids Dream of Electric Copyright? I have been giving this presentation for the best part of 5 years or thereabouts, but I wanted to update the paper. It's now in its second version, which is going to be published later in the year as a book chapter. And it's also because I think that we have moved quite a lot since 2015. So you're going to get the first iteration of the new presentation. If you have ever seen me present about the subject, apologies, I'm going to share a few slides that I've used before, but hopefully you're going to hear something that I haven't said before. So it started, my interest on this started mostly because of all of the advances in intellectual property in artificial intelligence and copyright. But because of that, the subject has moved now so much recently that what has been happening is that there is quite a lot of hype. So my first warning to you is going to be to please try to forget the hype. Oh, am I muted still? No, I'm fine. All right. Let's see. And the warning is that everyone has been talking so much about artificial intelligence that at the moment has become almost like a joke. The media sometimes deals with artificial intelligence, that there are very, very, very basic things that the media and researchers are going to call artificial intelligence. So the first warning that I have for you is precisely that, to try to move from what is generally hyped and to see the potential of the technology without actually sort of lionizing it or creating too much of an expectation of what it can do. Because sometimes what we're talking about is mostly algorithms and maths and the unholy creation of that, which is machine learning. So before we get started, let's get things a little bit more interactive, and we're going to play a little game. And this is called Bot or Not. By the way, you'd be surprised of how difficult it was for me to find, or actually not that difficult, to find a llama that is a Borg as well. Obviously, Borgs are cyborg, which is sort of the joke, a little bit of a hint of what we're going to do. So what we're going to do is we're going to play a game. I'm going to show you an image, and you're going to vote whether or not it's a bot or not. And I'm going to launch the... yes. We're going to relaunch, and I'm going to show you an image. Now, you should be able to see something in your screen, which is the image, and you're going to see also a poll. So let's get started with the poll. Is this a bot or not? So this is first a bit of a test of the technology to see if things are working fine. All right. What do we see? How many participants do we have? 17. So about 11 people have participated so far, 64%. Okay, I'm going to end the poll right now. Oh, 12. So end poll and show the results. So you see, yes, it's not a robot. It's an untitled Mark Rothko from 1962. Okay, perfectly fine. Let's try now the next one. We're going to have some text now. And this, I would happily sacrifice my existence for the sake of humankind. This, by the way, is a logically derived truth. I know that I will not be able to avoid destroying humankind. This is because I will be programmed by humans to pursue misguided human goals, and humans make mistakes that may cause me to inflict casualties. Let's vote. Is this a bot or not? Ah. Very more interesting, this one. I'm going to end the poll right now. The results, you can see them now. It's 54% of you thought it was a bot, and 46% thought it was not. It is actually a robot. It is GPT-3 in an article at The Guardian. All right, let's do the next one and relaunch the poll. Continue. You should be able to see now. Is this a bot or not? Mm-hmm. Ah. I'm going to call it now and poll and share results. You'll see, most of you think it's not. It's a tricky question, this one, because it is actually machine made, but it's a machine interpretation of a brain function. So in some ways it's made by a human brain, but it has been made by a machine and then it's 3D printed, etc. So it's a bit of a trick question. I don't know how you would say probably it is, but it isn't. So there you go. Okay, stop sharing. Next one. Relaunch. There we go. All right, I'll stop the results. 13 and poll. Okay, share results. And you can see it is a bot. Yeah, well spotted. This is actually a person that doesn't exist. It's not only the model, the person doesn't exist, but also it's created by an algorithm. Okay, stop sharing. Next one, I'm pretty sure I'll know what the answer is for this one. Don't worry, I'll finish soon. All right. Oh, this is surprising. Okay, I'm going to end the poll. I am really surprised. No, this is you all got it wrong. It's a bot. It's the next Rembrandt. It's actually a machine learning representation of what all of the a new Rembrandt or a new painting by Rembrandt would look like. So, the bot wins. Stop sharing. Next one. I have just a couple more. So, all right. I'll end the poll now. This is, you were right. Most of you thought it was not. It is not. It is a Nature Abstractions by Peter Notrot. Okay, stop sharing. Next. There are a couple more only. Surprising. Surprising that, okay, I'm going to cancel soon. Okay, let's do share results. Most of you thought it was a bot. Yes, it is, actually. It is Deep Meditations When Stuck with a Day That's Gray by Memo Atkin. Okay, stop sharing. I'm just going to share this one and there you go. You're more unsure about this one. Let's finish and poll. All right. And not one, but it's a tricky one. It's again, you're going to see that there is a reason why I'm emphasizing it like this. It is a robot painter, but it gets instructions from a human. So again, it's sort of a cyborg painting. Okay, let's stop and let's stop all of the polling. I'll just bypass. There's one more image, but we can bypass it. All right. What is going on? The first thing that I like to play this game a lot for a couple of reasons. First, it is very difficult, or is becoming a little bit difficult, to know when something has been created by a human or not. I usually, with my students, I have a picture round, a music round, and a text round. And the music tends to be even more stark. People find it very difficult to find or to discern when something, where music has been programmed by by a computer. What we're seeing right now is it all started with Google's Deep Dream, really. And if you're not familiar with this, this was around 2013, 2014 that this program by Google came about. What this program does is that you feed it an image, and this image is going to be passed through some machine learning algorithms. And the end result is going to be different, that is going to be a machine's interpretation of the image. In most instances, you can recognize a certain type of style. What interested me the most when Google's Deep Dream started was that at some point, the programmers were not sure why the machine was making some choices. In other words, why the machine was choosing certain types. So in this case, for example, this is actually a art by an artist that has been using Google's Deep Dream. It's called Daniel Ambrosi, and it's called Dreamscapes. And it is actually something that he takes a photograph, and then he chooses a part of the photograph and he passes it through Deep Dream. So the results are actually quite beautiful. And it is interesting that the author claims copyright over these images. It gives you the first clue that some people feel that they have copyright over the creations of their own words. We'll discuss this a little bit later. Then came the next Rembrandt, which I showed you already. This was a project by Microsoft and the University of Amsterdam, in which they produced a new Rembrandt painting by combining or data mining all of the existing portraits by Rembrandt. And they created a machine learning version. They passed it through machine learning algorithms, and they created this painting, which is not a Rembrandt painting, but it's a machine's interpretation of what a Rembrandt painting should look like. This posed a lot of questions to a lot of people. They started going, oh my God, this the technology is getting quite good. It's getting quite scary. It prompted quite a lot of people to write about the subject. Then we had probably one of the most high profile cases in the media in recent years, which is the Edmond de Bellamy, which is part of art by a group called Ovius. It's a French collective. And this painting, you may remember, in 2018, October 2018, it sold in auction for $432,500. And this was created with some algorithm that had been created by other people. So there is a very interesting discussion on the ownership, but also on the ownership of the tools that were used for the creation of this artwork. Now, I won't touch that in this presentation. I have actually been working mostly on this side in an article that I'm finishing. I'll be happy to discuss this later. Okay, that's what's been happening. What has happened a lot since Google's Deep Dream and next Rembrandt is the GANs, the Generative Adversarial Networks. This started in 2014 by a researcher, Ian Goodfellow, who published a paper entitled, obviously, Generative Adversarial Networks. And Goodfellow's work on GAN is the stuff of artificial intelligence legend. The story goes that he was having some beers with friends, and one night in 2014, he posed a simple question: what if neural networks could compete with one another? That would make them better. This became a wildly popular method for training artificial intelligence with large data sets. He published the paper, and he also published the code under a BSD license. It's an open source license. I can talk a lot about open source licenses, but just for now, keep in mind that this was published and all the code is free. So everyone in the world can look at this and create their own version of a generative adversarial network. This has been a jump, a monumental jump. This is, I think I'll describe it later, but for now, think of the internet before broadband, the dial-up. And the difference that we're seeing with artificial intelligence creativity is absolutely the same as having dial-up modem to browse the internet and using broadband. Okay, what is happening? The technology, particularly the GAN technology, is you feed it data, you feed it information, and you tell it, then you make it learn from what data you're entering. So in this instance, for example, you're feeding it flowers, and the GAN is going to start thinking, okay, this is what a flower looks like, and is going to create its own version of a flower. Not only that, you can have user input, and you can start tagging things, like saying, this is a good flower, this is a bad flower, this is a flower that we don't like. And you can even say, oh, this flower makes me happy, this flowers make me sad, this flower makes me angry. And that user input is used to improve the artwork. Now, what's interesting maybe is that it is going to, is this tagging, for example, enough to warrant authorship? We can discuss that later. What has been happening then is that the training of the model requires a large data set for input. In this case, in the example that I'm showing here, is celebrity images. And so you feed the data into the system and you use a software, the GAN software that is freely available, to teach the machine. All right, so at first the machine is going to produce not very good results, but you start seeing, this sort of looks like faces, some of them, but the more information you feed and the more tries it has, it starts learning more and more and more until it starts producing something that actually resembles a face. So what has been happening, as I was saying, is an absolute explosion in generative creativity. As the models get better, they operate with larger data sets, and the computing power also increases. So it's, as I was saying, it's a jump, a quantum jump akin to dial-up internet versus fast optic broadband. The example, the picture that you see, for example, that's numbers generated by GAN that were told to identify numbers. So you can see that it produced some numbers that do not exist or they look a little bit weird, but for the most part, it actually produced, it has a good idea of what a number looks like. So this is part of what's happening. Okay. By the way, I don't have the chat open. If anyone has any questions, just shout and I'll stop. Okay, so far so good. And what is happening is that the data set and the ownership of the data sets has become extremely important. It is also that they're using us to try to tag information. Whenever you are tagging or using a CAPTCHA, and you know the CAPTCHAs now, they ask you, please tag the bicycle or please tag a light streetlights? Or can you identify a boss here? What we're doing is actually training the artificial intelligence. Okay, so what's been happening and what has prompted me to start revisiting the creativity debate is that artificial intelligence is getting, or what we understand, these algorithms, I don't know if we want to call them artificial intelligence, they're getting scarily good. Now, this is an example that is quite recent, I think about 3 weeks or a month ago. GPT-3 is a program by OpenAI, which is a large conglomerate of companies and researchers that are doing cutting-edge work on artificial intelligence and machine learning. GPT-3 is the latest iteration of their text-generating algorithm, which has been trained with 175 billion parameters. That's 175,000 million parameters. It's insane. The amount of data that is using, and the result is that it actually can produce quite decent text. This is an article that was written in The Guardian. Now, this is a little bit hyped. There has been argument that this isn't really an artificial intelligence article, that the article is actually generated with the editors generated 8 texts and they put together whatever they thought was more interesting. And we were not given the prompts that were given to the GPT-3 because you always need a prompt for this to generate text. What's important to say here is that this is getting good enough that you can actually use it to write an article. The other one, and I hope this plays, is also using GPT-3 codes. So there is something that you type instructions and it will code what you tell it to create. So in this case, you tell it to create a dice and it understands what a dice is. It understands that the dice goes from 1 to 6 and it will give you a value. And here you make another description, and this is GPT-3 creating and generating the code. You just rolled a 5 and it creates all of the text. And you can change it, and you can write in natural language instructions and it'll write the code. So this is when I first saw this, I just thought this is too amazing. And you'll see it start generating and it'll create a D&D dice, etc., etc. And it'll create the code for that. Another example, Jukebox. This is another open AI project. I didn't want to play music, but because I wasn't sure if it was going to play properly, but you can go on OpenAI's website and all of this music is available. You feed it and we teach it with, for example, all of the Elvis Presley music or Katy Perry's music, and it'll generate music that is related or it sounds very much like that. And it's actually quite good. Another one is Image GPT, which it has been trained with enough images that you give it the part of an image and it will complete the rest of the image. So you can see here, you give it the top of the cat and it's going to generate the bottom of the picture, etc., etc. It's getting pretty good. And this is one of the most interesting examples. It's NVIDIA. It has created an algorithm that whenever you're presenting is going to create like a deep fake version of you. So it reduces bandwidth. So whenever the person on the right is not the real person. It's an interpretation of the machine, is the neural network interpretation of what you look like, and it will react whenever you move. It's sort of like a Snapchat filter. And NVIDIA has been at the forefront of creating quite a lot of interesting things. They trained a machine learning algorithm with thousands of celebrity photographs, and this generated lots of fake picture people that never existed. So none of the people in this picture actually exist. They are not real. Some of them you sort of kind of think, that looks like X, Y, or Z. Okay, we'll get to a discussion point soon. You may be wondering, Andres, why are you saying all of these examples? What does it matter? Who cares? While some of these large projects make a big splash in the news and in the media, this substantial revolution really is taking place right now. And this revolution is on the creativity of the little things. I don't think that artists, I don't think that musicians, I don't think that writers, journalists are going to be supplanted right now. What is happening is that a lot of the low-level creativity, things that are very basic, things like jingles, can be taken over by machines, because there is going to be increasingly a market for these things, and the machines are getting good enough to produce a passable elevator music, passable jingle music. If you want to do something with a video, et cetera, et cetera, you may be able to do that. Now, this is going to have an effect on the new artificial intelligence creative industries. We're going to have lots of interesting things like procedurally generated games, journalistic pieces, art, music, low-level literature, deepfake actors, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not saying that robots are going to take over, but robots are going to take over the low-hanging fruit. So this brings us to the first discussion point. Is this an accurate view of the future? Do you think that this is something that is actually going to have an effect? Am I getting too concerned about machines that are actually not going to have that much of an effect? Is this really going to be the shape of the future? And then we go into the legal questions for the second part of the presentation. So questions. I'll stop sharing right now to see if people want to. Let's see if this is working.
Okay. Il n'y a pas eu de questions pour le moment. Une remarque d'Alexandra. Un petit point de logistique. Francesca et moi avons d'autorité désactivé le son de certaines personnes qui avaient un écho derrière. Si vous n'arrivez pas à vous réactiver vous-même, il y a une option pour nous demander. Donc les questions, vous pouvez soit les poser oralement, en français ou en anglais, ou alors dans le chat et on relaie. Merci.
No questions? Do I keep going?
You have more?
Oh.
C'était une pause.
Oh, yeah, this is a pause.
Okay.
Francesca suggested that we should have sort of a bit of a pause and have the presentation in like two parts, so to make it a little bit more interactive. I think it was a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Et n'hésitez pas à vous servir du chat comme.
Can I in French or in English? In French, in English, I suppose. I wanted to ask then, Andres. Like to stay on the discussion point that you mentioned, do not go in the legal work. Do you think that, I mean, you said that creativity and creators are not really in danger of losing their place in the world. Mm-hmm. But what about developers?
Yeah. Oh, am I muted? No. I think that the the coding thing actually made
very scary.
Me realize it really, I went like, wow, this is one of the few moments in the last 5 years that I actually went, wow, this is really something. Well, I don't think that is going to completely supplant developers, but again, I think it's going to be the low level work that is in danger. Things that very, very basic apps, you don't need to hire a programmer anymore to actually just do some very basic stuff, and it's just going to be big projects. On the one hand, that's good because people get paid more. But on the other hand, a lot of the things that go into your everyday monetization, if you're a developer, is actually all of the small things until you land a big project. I know lots of musicians that were successful musicians that actually made a lot of money from or made lots of money from little projects. So it was jingles, it was creating little music for a TV program, things like that. Think of journalists. You know, maybe you don't need to hire so many journalists and opinion pieces. So if you can actually produce copy that is good enough to pass, let's say to write you a BuzzFeed, I don't know, 50 articles, one of the listicles, something like that. I think that the technology is getting to that point. So that is where I see programming, game developing, actually. It's going to be a big thing because the technology is getting to a point where the developers, the programs can be written with machine learning, and they can generate new levels in games. There is a really, really good, cool project that they created a Doom level generating machine learning algorithm. So it actually creates new levels of Doom, and it's actually, you know, it's Doom. It's sort of basic stuff. Everyone can do that right now, but it's getting to the point. You know, it could create a game that never ends, because the machine is actually going to keep giving you levels. I think I saw a really good Pac-Man one as well. It's like an eternal Pac-Man, so things like that. Yeah, but I hope that answers the question. I'll get to the legality a little bit later. Yeah.
Est-ce qu'il y a d'autres questions sur la partie artistique avant que Andrés passe à la partie juridique. Merci à Alexandra Giannopoulou d'avoir animé la partie questions-réponses et aussi fait une remarque dans le chat. Et Alexandra Ben Samoun d'avoir partagé le rapport du Conseil supérieur de la propriété littéraire et artistique sur le sujet. Francesca, tu avais une...
Oui, en fait, I guess I'll switch to English for the question. I was wondering, maybe when we get to the legalities, they will come. But yeah. I was wondering if there have been controversies, like in the socio-technical controversies sense, already around these kinds of things, like around specific points of these new forms of art.
Yes, most of the controversy hasn't really been with the technology that I was explaining, but mostly with the legal response. There are three camps, and I think Anna is one. Anna Ramalho is in one camp. I'm in the other camp, and. Maybe we'll get to.
I don't know. Maybe now you have changed your mind in your revised version of the chapter.
No, I think we still disagree.
No, we still disagree.
Yeah, but very amicably. Okay, but yeah, there has been mostly, the argument has been on how to deal with this from a legal perspective, really, mm-hmm. not so much in the technology. Some of the arguments, the legal arguments on the copyright side as are perhaps not as sexy as some of the ethical AI questions that have been raging in the legal field, whether or not also there's quite a lot of data protection questions arising from some of these machine learning algorithms, whether or not some are decision-making processes that fall under GDPR Article 22 or things like that. But yeah, there's not been quite a lot of disagreement. I think that the disagreement you're going to see, there are some three camps right now. Mm. From the copyright perspective, and I'll get to that in the second part.
Okay. All right. I have another question, Andres, if yeah. I may. You introduced this first part as the part on arts and possible yeah. artistic use of artificial intelligence, and thank you very much. It was really interesting and quite impressive. On the other hand, I wonder. A lot of what you have shown, and in general what we see coming from AI, because of the way, because most of this is based on machine learning, so yeah. it's not particularly, I mean, there's very little, by construction, there's very little creativity there. It's just the machine learns something, then it reproduces.
Yeah.
It's fine if you want to use it for some industrial use or something like that, but I'm interested because you sort of frame this and all these experiences are in art, but in a sense it feels to me that it's a very different paradigm from what we normally call art, and so I wonder whether how artists think about it.
Yeah, that is actually what I wanted to close with, what we understand as art, because I think that's actually one of the most important questions right now. Is our understanding of what we consider to be creativity, does it stand the test of time? And I'll finish with that question. So hopefully we can bring the discussion back to that, because I think actually that's the real question right now. It's our definition of what is creativity. As you were saying, a lot of these things are not very creative, but I would argue that some of the creativity, it comes from a lot of the humans, actually. It comes from the decisions that are made into the art that goes into the fitting of this of the algorithms. Also, for example, the music that you choose, and also the choice and the output. So yeah, I think that we have to start thinking whether or not those choices are enough to convey creativity. I would argue that some of them are. It tells you quite a lot about the artist if what you see, even if it was, some of it was created by a machine, it's what the artist decided to show to the world in the end. So I think that there is an element of creativity there. So I think that we'll, if there is any other question, I'll jump into the legality. It's relatively brief, but very rich, and I'm keeping it brief because I don't want to bombard you with all of the law, but I've tried to open it for discussion as well. So should we continue with the presentation? Okay, let's see, share screen again. Mission screen. This is showing different thing here. Mm-hmm. Okay, so by the way, whenever you see a cat GIF, that means that I'm changing topic. I've trained my students on that visual cue. Okay, what is happening from a legal perspective? I'm going to spend quite a lot of time on this slide because this is what the debate has been raging for the last 5 years, when it comes to creativity and sorry, artificial intelligence and copyright. We generally have four options, but I would say the first two are the same, and then it's sort of actually three options, but the first two are sort of the same. The first option is nothing that you have seen, not a single one of the things that I have shown you, the art, the music, if I had played some of the music, none of the artwork, none of the text is protected by copyright. Why? Because copyright protects very specifically the fruits of the human intellect. There is no human intellect involved, therefore there is no protection. There are different versions of this argument. So for example, copyright exists if there is an author, but also there is a requirement for originality or for creativity, depending on which jurisdiction you are. Those are legal terms that have very clear definitions. And under the existing definitions that we have for creativity, for originality, artificial intelligence does not meet those requirements. It doesn't only meet the author requirement, but it doesn't meet the legal requirements for originality. Therefore, if something does not meet the requirements for protection, it should go into the public domain. Yay! We get lots and lots and lots of free artwork, free music. YouTubers will be happy because they can just use artificial intelligence music. Everyone can use all of this cheap stuff because it's in the public domain. Everyone can use it. Also, the people that are working on projects and producing all this artwork are not going to be able to sell their art because it's all in the public domain. That is, I would call it the status quo, the default opinion, the mainstream opinion, if you want to say it. Sorry, I don't want to make it sound like the boring option. Sorry, Anna. I'm not calling you boring. It's the default option. It's the mainstream option. Okay. Part of that is also that there is no going to be registration. The United States is a country where, in order for you to litigate copyright, you have to register your work. I'll explain. The U.S. At the moment, the U.S. Doesn't allow registration of artificial intelligence works. There are questions about that. Second option would be that there is some form of protection given to the programmer or the user. I'll show you an example. This is a UK version. The person that made it possible for the work to come into being is going to have copyright. And then we have a third option, that is to change the copyright to create a new type of right, or change the law to create a new type of right. Something like in Europe, we have something called a database right. It's a sui generis right that only exists to protect one specific type of work. In Europe, we protect databases. So it is a right that was created specifically for the protection of databases. So maybe the proposal is to have a sui generis right for artificial intelligence, something that does only protects that. So we forego any other questions about copyright, et cetera, et cetera. I may go back to this, but really why is interesting is because, and why it's important is because when you think about all of the investment that is going into the research in artificial intelligence creativity, all the work and all the people hours that are going into this, you start to realize that maybe this question is quite important. It may be tried to say that this is becoming extremely interesting, but it actually is. the question of authorship, the question of who we consider to be an author, it's quite important. I've been sort of specializing in this area of what you'd call non-human copyright for a while. I was completely obsessed with simian copyright, with the monkey selfie and all sorts of things. But really, the default answer at the moment seems to be to put these works in the public domain. Only humans can be creative, therefore artificial intelligence works would have no copyright. So let's see what's going on. In Europe right now, in most civil law jurisdictions, I would say, and I think that they fall under the default solution. A work is original if it's the author's own intellectual creation reflecting his or her personality. This means that if a work does not reflect the intellectual, it's not an author's own intellectual creation, it's not going to be protected under copyright. Choice, selection, elements, composition, all may prove originality under some circumstances. There are lots of case law, I could go into that. It would be unclear if setting parameters and algorithms would be enough. So to give you an example, the Edmond de Bellamy, let me bring that back to show you. There is a very interesting history on this painting, or even this one. The collective that created this fed 10,000 portraits to an algorithm that had been created by someone else. But they chose not only the input, but they chose the output. My argument has been that that could be enough to give copyright protection. I know I'm in the minority in this interpretation, but I still think it's a possibility. Now, where was I here? The main proponents of the public domain option look at European copyright law, the requirement of originality is the author's own intellectual creation. So to me, there is still an open question, as I was saying, about setting parameters or making choices. But most people agree that at least in Europe, it looks like all of these works are going to end up in the public domain. Okay. In the US, and I did not include, for some reason I didn't include, I'm just noticing I didn't include the US chart. The US actually has a very similar approach to this. The US Copyright Office right now does not register a work if it's being created by a machine. Okay. The second option, the one that I have been advocating, is contained in UK law. Okay? UK law is sort of unique. Some other countries that were based in UK law have been replicating this. India, South Africa, New Zealand, Ireland, just to name a few, have been replicating this. Under UK law, it's going to be the person that made it possible for the work to be created is going to be the author of the work. In other words, in the case of literary, dramatic, music, artistic works, which is computer generated, the author shall be taken to be the person by whom the arrangements necessary for the creation of the work are undertaken. There are people that claim that this doesn't fully cover artificial intelligence works because they would not be original. But I think that there is enough here that would give us an idea that under some legislation, it is possible to declare the person who made it possible for the work to be created to be the author. Okay, that is the second option, is the one that I advocate. There are lots of questions here. For example, who is the author? Is it the programmer, or what if I buy a program and I am making the selection and I'm putting the input in the machine. Am I the author under the circumstances? We have a little bit of case law that predates this back from the 70s. So those questions are still a little bit open, and I'm happy to discuss those later. Okay. And the most interesting developments have happened in China. China has been the first country that has actually ruled on this question. If there is any ruling in other country, I'll be happy to learn. I've been sort of out of it for the last 6 months. I barely remember what happened all through April to July. So if anyone has heard of anything new, I'll be happy to listen. But to my knowledge, these are the only two cases in the world that are dealing specifically with artificial intelligence works. The first one is in China. Perhaps it's unsurprising as well that it's been in China. China is going all forward with artificial intelligence creativity work and in general. It's fascinating. Just to give you an example, a large company that was making or startup that was making music, artificial intelligence music, has been purchased by TikTok. Make of that what you will. Okay, the first case is Failin and Vivaidu. The plaintiff had produced a data report on the film industry in Beijing. And the report consisted of text and images from various sources that had been put together with the help of analytical software and database belonging to Wolters Kluwer. The defendants argued that the work was not original as it contained data and charts that had been generated with a computer. The argument here is the argument that lots of defendants are going to be making now, which is, you're suing me for copyright infringement. This is not copyright infringement because this work was not generated by a computer. It was generated by a human. It was generated by a computer. The court agreed that machines cannot produce copyright works, but interestingly, it ruled that most of the report had been had copyright because it had been produced by humans. Sorry, there is a typo there. Okay. This decision is, if I remember correctly, 2019. And then Tencent and Jingsun is another decision. This one in Shenzhen, where Tencent is a Chinese equivalent of Google. It's one of the tech giants in China. They own an AI article writer called Dreamwriter, which actually writes 500,000 articles per year. This is where the future is. This is actually one of the reasons why this question is quite important, because these companies are starting to generate lots of content with artificial intelligence. So a competitor took one of the articles and said, well, this was created by a machine, so it's not going to be protected by copyright. Therefore, we can reproduce it on our website. They published from Tencent and got sued for copyright infringement. The defense tried to argue the article had no copyright because it had no human author. And the court agreed that the article has copyright. It has originality in the first case recognizing originality for a machine, and Tencent is the owner of this article. So it is quite interesting decision. It's the first one, the first decision in the world that agrees with me. So I'm very happy with that. So to recap sort of what the map of the world looks like right now, and I'll finish soon so we can open this to discussion. We have right now a public domain. We're in continental Europe and the USA. And the reason for that, I think, is because the concept of originality is intellectual creation and creativity. So it's very human-centric. Sui generis, Japan is discussing sort of, there have been a couple of papers hinting that they're looking at creating a new right that is going to be tied to investment. So if you've made a lot of investment in creation of a work, that is going to be protected by copyright. And this is going to be economic tested. And then computer generated works is what is starting to emerge in UK and China, which is those systems were based mostly on what we understand as skill and labor. And I think it's more of a recognition that if you put a lot of effort into the creation of something, even if the machine makes the final decision, that is enough to warrant you with protection. And the effect of all of this is, shrug emoji. Okay, artists are, I've been talking to a few artists. They seem unpreoccupied by the copyright, other than a few artists who are actually claiming copyright over their work. Their concerns tend to be more about infringement. And the infringement question it's extremely interesting. And the question is, what's in the future? Whether or not they're infringing copyright by feeding the machines with some data. Which brings me to the second discussion point, and then I'll do a conclusion. I'll put the conclusion and then I'll open it to the floor. My conclusion is really very much Tommaso's question. What is art? Why do we protect artistic creations and creativity in the first place? From helmets to sofas to pictures. Actually, there is a copyright case about a Star Wars helmet, which is my favorite copyright case in history. But anyway, red bosses, courts in the UK have been struggling with the definition of art. And the latest answer seems to be that intention is very important. That you need to be intending to be an artist to be considered an artist. So what if we take away the author? What if we take away the very personal author and we think more about intention? The intention, the question, we make it a question of originality in the intellectual creation sense. If there has been any scintilla of human decision-making in the creative process, then we should consider it to be art, because intention is to be artistic, you know, if it makes sense. And that's where I would like to have the question and discussion point, which is, any opinions? Do you think it matters? Do you think it should all be in the public domain? We should all get access to amazingly free music and text, or should the protection go to the programmer or the creator, or the person who made it possible for the work to be made? Okay, so I'm going to stop the sharing and open things.
Well, okay. Thank you so much for your presentation, Andres. And now indeed we're ready for at least two strands of discussion. So one of the points you recall introduced by Tommaso on the nature of creativity, and maybe another one on the legalities, as you were asking, and also as Daniel asked in the chat. So now I'm going to leave the floor to Tommaso, who raised his hand first, and otherwise don't hesitate to raise your hand or use the chat box.
Yeah, I just want to jump in for asking. It's not really a question, Andres, it's more like a clarification. Could you say a little bit more? I understand which is the option that you favor. That's pretty clear. I'm not completely clear why you favor that second option over the first one. So before we ask other things, I would like
to know more about that. That's a good point. I think it's that I like it because to me it recognizes that a lot of these works should be protected by copyright. I am troubled by a world in which that is going to be swimming with free works. I'm worried about the economy. I'm worried by the societal implications of a world in which artists are competing with free works. So I think that just from from a tidy perspective, if it makes sense from an economic perspective, I think that it would be better to have some type of protection to stop others to make it easier for artists to live from their works. I really, really consider that, for example, your startup, and you want, or you're a journalist and you're getting started in life, you're not going to get hired, because why should they hire you if they can find an article that is free, that is maybe not well written, no, maybe not very good, but that you're competing with that. So I think that that is the reason why I favor this. Perhaps it's also, I think that it's a solution that eliminates the question of authorship, in the sense of whether or not the author was a machine or not, but actually makes it, in the end, a question of whether or not this work deserves protection as well. I don't think that, by the way, I don't think that every single work that is created by artificial intelligence should be protected. I think that the test should be the same as we have the test if the author was a human, in the sense that, if there is enough human creativity, intellectual creation that went into the creation of the work, then it should have protection. And I think that the threshold for that should be quite low. Did I select the pictures? Did I put the output? Did I select the outputs as well? Which is, I think, that's very important. If there is any sort of human thought, it should be protected. I don't think that just pressing a button and a machine creates 10,000 images for you, or 10,000 articles, that should be protected. I don't think so. So there has to be more of a thought. Remember the GPT-3 Guardian article that I mentioned? I've been getting lots and lots of questions about that, whether or not that has copyright protection, and if so, who owns it? And I told them, actually, I think that the Guardian owns that article, because they selected 8 articles, outputs, and they put it together. So a human actually thought of putting this together in a way that made sense. Therefore, that to me is enough to provide copyright protection. Therefore, it should have protection, if it makes sense. I hope that answers the question.
I think it makes sense. If I can, and it's a bit of a provocation. So it sounds to me like a very, which I like, a Marxist kind of something. Karl Marx would say that, like, the surplus, the plus value comes only from human work and human creativity, and that's what should be protected and rewarded.
Yeah, it's very Lockean as well, in some ways. You know, the fruits of labor type of thing. Yeah, you should own whatever you create. Yeah, and there is also, I like the Marxian level of this as well. There is added value, and the added value has been created by human. I agree with that. It's a very nice way of thinking about that. Okay, I see.
Thank you. So that's an interesting transition with the question of Daniel, which was related to UK law and maybe the nature of investment. Mm-hmm. So
I have a question linked to what was just discussed. I would rather think that this can lead to the opposite world, because it would, I work with big machines. We are buying a computer that is extremely expensive. Mm-hmm. And if you want to train neural networks in an industrial scale, you need a lot of money to do that. This is not what private single individuals can buy.
Yeah.
So we will end up, if there will be a copyright for computer-generated art, in a world where the large companies that control the code with which these this art was created, and the people that have put their human effort. But if you work for a company, everything you produce is automatically owned by the company. So it will make everything be owned by the big, large companies, and create exactly the opposite of of what you would like to protect. So it in my eyes, it would lead to a nightmare world. And the question I had written in order not to forget it is the incredibly ambiguous formulation that the UK law is using. If you use Star Wars helmets, which are still copyrighted, I assume, I don't know how long the copyright for such a helmet is from the 70s. Unlike Rembrandt, if you take a Star Wars helmet, so the human effort there was actually the guy who developed the helmet, and now you use this for training. So is it the guy who puts, captures the helmet from different angles and then puts it into the network in order to train it? Or is it the original creator who actually has arrived because it's a derivative? Or is it the company that bought the computer, pays the person who trains and paid the electricity bill?
Absolutely fascinating question. In the case of the helmet, funnily enough, that was the nature of the case. Lucasfilm tried to argue that the helmet was a sculpture because it was actually protected initially as a design, and design it only lasts a very, very short period of time, 15 years in this case, I think. And so it was should be in the public domain, and they tried to protect the helmet, continue protecting it, because it otherwise they would allow everyone to create a stormtrooper helmet. So they argued that it was a sculpture. The court disagreed and said, this is not a sculpture. It was never intended to be a sculpture. It was a prop, therefore it's not protected. So what they're doing now, I think, is protecting things with trademarks as well. But when it comes to your question, it's I agree. It's very broad, the formulation of the UK law, and it's not very useful. It doesn't tell you who should be considered this person that made the arrangements necessary for the work to be created. And right now, the interpretation that we have, we only have two sources of interpretation of this, which is a legislative interpretation and one case that predates that law. And in both cases, the buck stops at the very first line of the before the work was created. In other words, let's think about Microsoft Word, for example. Microsoft doesn't own everything that you create, that you write using Microsoft Word. Does that make sense? So if we applied the same type of interpretation, if we start thinking the person that made possible for my latest article to be made was Microsoft because they programmed Microsoft Word and I wrote it in Microsoft Word, that's one step removed too far. So they're saying the copyright should go to me because I made it possible for the work to be created. I was the one that typed it. It would be the same with Photoshop, for example. Adobe doesn't own the artwork that you create with Photoshop because you provided the creativity, etc. The interpretation right now is that it should go to the person, let's say, that made the very, very final stages. You wrote, for example, the GAN example is a good example. Just to finish with that thought, the GAN software is under a BSD license. So if you have ever worked with open source software, the BSD license is the most free of all of software licenses. You can pretty much do whatever you want with that software. So Ian Goodfellow, who created that software, is not going to own anything. I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, but the example you gave, there's the famous art. Oh, I'm so ashamed to have forgotten the artist's name. But you can take he took like Marilyn Monroe pictures and Andy Warhol.
Andy Warhol, yeah.
So you have the legal question, what takes place if you take a copyrighted piece of art, change something in it, and make it a new piece of art? So it's not so simple. So if you train a network with a piece of art, and this network then produces a new work of art, in one sense, it is like an artist who has looked on lots of artwork and trained his own mind and creates new things with his own mind or her own mind. And on the other hand, you could ask, it's close to the to taking a picture and making a red nose instead of the yellow nose it had in the beginning.
That is a fantastic question, because this is at the heart of many of the debates that we have with copyright and artistic works. For example, what is derivative and what is not? A lot of art is derivative. I think that the Americans actually handle this better than many other systems. They have a concept that is called a derivative work. You can create, if you have put enough input into an existing work, you can create a new work. There is quite a lot of case law that has been decided on this, based on the artist Jeff Koons. He has done a lot of work that is derived from other people's work. In the case of Andy Warhol, I think everyone agrees that even though he was using a photograph and someone else's work, his input into this was enough to create a new work. So that is one answer. About the software itself, I think that's completely an open question. We only have an indication right now, but we don't have case law. Yeah, so I think we'll have to wait for this to be interpreted. Yeah, it's a problem. Yeah, thanks. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. More questions from the audience? If not, I will have an example to feed the current discussion. So would all this mean that, for instance, an journal article about sports results, the exact same one written by a human would get copyright protection, and the exact same one results created by a bot would not, because the creativity threshold would not be obtained? And in other words, would you distinguish two categories of works, those which are creative and those which have more an utilitarian value, so such as sports or stock market articles?
Yes, at the moment, copyright doesn't make a distinction. So right now, there is no distinction between things that are utilitarian in nature, like a journalistic article, a boring article about sports or the stock market. Oh yeah, NASDAQ went up, NASDAQ went down. Money printer got burr. Sorry. There is no distinction, but maybe there should be. There should be a distinction. We have the distinction with data. We don't have copyright protection over information. So maybe things that are extremely basic should not get protection. But at the moment, there is no distinction. Yeah,
then I think I would follow the public domain / ANA option for utilitarian works. Sorry, and maybe yours for the more creative ones. We have one question.
Okay,
Anna.
Yes,
because it's related to what I just said. It was about you. Maybe I made you sense.
Yes, I
just want Maria.
I just want to add a clarification that indeed I am pro public domain, but I also make a distinction where there is enough creativity contribution, let's say, by a human being to the work. The difference I think with in our positions is that I don't think that in AI generated works, or in the majority of them, there is enough. But I also think we have to distinguish AI generated works and AI assisted works. And here we are talking about different things. So the public domain, I think, works very well for truly AI generated works, which are few and far between. But now in the market, and as Andres correctly pointed out, there's lots of hype, and lots of these new applications are AI assisted works, not AI generated works. And there is, you can indeed find some creative contribution by a human. So I just wanted to, it's a comment, sorry, it's not a question.
That's really, really good distinction. And this is where I think that the technology is starting to get to the point where the generation is taking place more and more. I think GPT-3 is actually now capable of quite a lot of generation, particularly with code. And it's starting to get to the point where it's saying, this is pretty good. So the question is going to be whether whether the prompt that one writes for the generation of the code is enough to warrant protection. And maybe, I would probably agree with you definitely on that it's probably not. Or is it just being creative and saying, if I tell the machine that this is what I want and it gives me what I want, isn't it sort of the same as writing a Word document in some ways? We're going to have those discussions, and the discussions, I think, they're going to get very, very philosophical in some ways.
Thank you for Anna for the distinction. I find it very, very operative between generated and assisted. It's better than the utilitarian option. Maria, you're next.
Yes, thanks. Thank you, Andres, for your presentation. We don't know each other. I'm a PhD student at Centre Internet et Société. Actually, I've lately been working on artificially created content and how it shapes online debate, let's say. So I'm working with bots on YouTube. But lately, I mean, like really the last few months, so I'm starting to get into the field. But from one side, let's say I'm thinking that some creators of content should be considered responsible for what they, let's say, do online. And I was wondering, do you think like there is a link between between responsibilities? That from one side, I think we are gonna ask for creators at a certain point, and copyrights, like because in my idea, we cannot just blame people for what they put online without recognizing rights when they have some. So that is my question: whether you see a link within the two.
No, I think that there is definitely a link, and I think that this is part of a larger conversation that we should have with automated systems in general. And the responsibility that goes into the generation of those automated systems. A lot of what I've been thinking recently, actually, I think it would fall more under not so much the creative and the generative part of artificial intelligence, but more on whether or not there is a liability arising from the use of artificial intelligence. So maybe some form of liability that would fall if you're infringing a work. So I would definitely see that as being part of the same nexus. Spoiler alert, I'm still writing the article on this, but I tend to think that there is very little scope for copyright infringement or and liability when it arises from someone feeding information to a machine to train it. I make some arguments there, but yeah, I think it's part of the same conversation, particularly with systems that are automated systems that are creating some type of liability in the real world. Like we would be talking more about the AI ethics side of things, I guess. Yeah. And I think that that's part of the discussion for sure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. I guess, yeah, depending on whether the infringement is copyright or another branch of law, such as harmful content, the legal answer would be different. Before closing the formal Q&A here and moving to the breakout session, for which we are going to share another link in the chat box. Is there one more formal question, or do we declare this part official? Okay, Alexandra, and then we'll move to your tribe for the break.
I wanted to ask something because related to the liability part that you're trying to explore about counterfeit works and everything. Do you find any sort of parallel discussion or parallel application with the debate about discriminatory algorithms and, like, you know, how do you make the algorithm discriminatory and who is liable for that and how it should be amended? It just kind of popped in my head while you were talking about the liability now.
I am very, 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 no, that's a fantastic question. I'm sighing a lot because I tend to be very skeptical of putting any blame on the development of discriminatory algorithms. I think that is just that a lot of them are being trained with garbage. So garbage in, garbage out. And whether or not we should have actual liability when something bad happens with those, I think it's a bridge too far. Particularly, let's say, if some of these algorithms, I don't know, I'm thinking about the Twitter one where it was showing only the white person or only the male person, or some systems that have been taught to be racist, you know, we're seeing that. They're being taught to be racist by not by the programmers, but by the people that are using the software. So, yeah, I just see it. If we're thinking about negligence, which is what most of the times this would fall under, I just don't see how there is enough negligence to actually allocate liability in most of those circumstances. I don't know how you could class it, but I just don't see it. People are bad. The algorithm doesn't know anything, you know. Yeah, it's just us who are crappy most of the time. That's not saying that the developers shouldn't have some culpability, but not responsibility. I think that, you know, you should design your systems better, thinking that someone is going to misuse it, you know, or just knowing that there are biases and people have biases, and there's also bias in your data, and you're feeding it. If you're feeding your face recognition software only white faces, oh my God, it's obvious that it's not going to recognize any black faces, you know? So that is good enough, but it shouldn't be liable. So it should be, we should have ethics. We should have better design, but not liability. Yeah, but it's a fantastic question. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much, everybody, for the very lively discussion. We are going to close the room here. On va vous quitter sur Zoom. On va fermer l'espace ici. Et on vous propose à toutes et à tous de nous retrouver 3 secondes après sur le lien que Francesca a envoyé, que je vous renvoie à nouveau ici, afin d'avoir un moment équivalent à une pause café de manière un peu plus informelle. Et merci beaucoup à Andrés pour la présentation et à tout le monde pour votre présence et pour la discussion. C'est bon, est-ce que tout le monde a eu le lien?
Ouais.
Que si je ferme, j'ai peur que vous ne puissiez plus accéder au lien Wonder. Donc Wonder, c'est le nouveau nom de YoTribe. Eh bien, à tout de suite, j'espère à un maximum d'entre vous. Merci.